The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Cyberspace is a place that only a human being locates, where there's so much information to take. Then you enter an entirely new phase. Once you get off the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Zone.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
Because you never know where life is going to take you, and you can't change where you've been. But today, I have the opportunity to choose. Here I am now, looking at 30, and I got so much to say. Gotta get this off of my chest, I gotta let it go today. I was always too concerned about what everybody would think, but I can't live for everybody, I gotta live my life for me, yeah. I've reached the fork in the road of my life, yeah. Nothing gonna happen unless I decide. The best that I can be.
I choose
to be authentic in everything
I do.
My past don't dictate who I am.
I choose,
yeah. I'd have been through some painful things, I thought that I would never make it through. Filled up with shame from the top of my head to the soles of my shoes. I put myself in so many chaotic circumstances. By the grace of God, I've been given so many second chances. Today I decided to let it all go. I'm dropping these bags, I'm making room for my joy. Every decision that I make will be my own.
And I choose
to be the best that I can be.
I choose
to be courageous in everything I do. My past don't dictate who I am. I choose, yeah.
And I choose
to be the best that I can be.
I choose
Junius, Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up. Alright? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griffin, Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Welcome to this edition of the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. From the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. And we started off the program with India Irie, I Choose. We all have a choice, and we are the sum total of our choices that we made throughout our lives, the omission, commission, choices of action, interaction have impacted us and have put us where we are, and they're life lessons that we can learn from our choices. That sets the stage for our guest today, Marcus Allen. From Achievability, they are a program that gets single parent females, many of them who are homeless, who have been in shelters, who have maybe been substance abusers, maybe even ex-offenders. The criterion is that they have to be homeless, a single parent, get them in a program that gives them a house. A house, not an apartment, gives them a house. They must enroll in post-secondary education, and they stay with them, and they have to take a minimum of 15 credits per semester. They stay with them, they mentor them, they coach them, they work with them, and even after they get their degree, they work with them for a full year following that. And they're doing great work. I know Marcus, and we used to work together when I was at the court. And I saw him recently at an affair, and we got reacquainted, and I stopped by and got a chance to look at the program, not only from a perspective of where they are in their offices and the building that they have, one of the buildings, they own over hundreds, some buildings in the West Philadelphia area, Cobbs Creek, Haddington section of Philadelphia. I was also able to go over and check out one of their programs. They were doing a coat giveaway for families. Got a chance to see that, even though the bulk of the people had left by the time I got there. We'll speak with Marcus following these messages. Don't go anywhere. You're logged on to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to join me in financially supporting the Blake Radio Network on a regular basis. We need your continuing patronage to help the Blake Radio Network remain alive and thriving both now and well into the future. There are several easy ways you can send your contribution. To use PayPal, click on the help link on the Blake Radio Network's website at www.blakeradio.com, or can go directly to the PayPal website and click the send money link. Type in rainbowsoul@blakeradio.com as the email address and Unlimited Ventures as the payee. Then follow the instructions. To send a check or money order, make it out to Unlimited Ventures, care of Neil Blake, and mail it to 73 Ireland Place, that's Ireland Place, Suite 109 Amityville, Amityville, New York, 11701. It's easy, painless, and uncomplicated. And you'll feel great after doing it, knowing you're keeping the Blake Radio Network alive and on the cutting edge of media technology. I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, thanking you in advance for your support. You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Stay tuned. All right, we're speaking with Marcus Allen, who's the CEO of
achievability, which is a housing, education, and social uplift program in Philadelphia. It's probably one of the best kept secrets in the city, in the region. They've been in existence for 30 years. They provide homes, not apartments, homes for people who have been homeless, ex-offenders, substance abusers, people who just had some issues and down on their luck or whatever, who want to get their lives together. So it's a pleasure to have him here on the program. We work together, full disclosure, we work together in another lifetime when I was a probation officer. He was representative for Vision Quest. And we would talk, and, you know, he's athlete and I was a referee, and we would talk about sports and just had a mutual respect for him. And then I happened to bump into him last month, and good to see him, he and his wife, and found out he was now the CEO here, so definitely had to come over and check him out. So welcome, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Junius. I'm happy that, you know, to be in front of you again. I think this is like my second or third interview with you, but, you know, we had a time lapse of about 6 or 7 years, so I'm trying to wipe some of the cobwebs off. But it's good to catch up. Thanks for having me, man.
So I've been away from the court for 6 years. Mm-hmm. I remember you were still, I think you were still there or you had left. So did you come here right after you left Vision Quest?
Yeah, I actually, even after you left the judicial system, I remained at Vision Quest another 6 years, or 5 years. I got promoted and became a chief operating officer for Vision Quest, and I ran all the operations in Pennsylvania, Maryland.
That's right.
Jersey,
you were doing New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that.
So I was, you know, trying to, you know, build that company up, and took over all their Northeast operations. Mm-hmm. And about a year and a half ago, had some philosophical differences with the leadership, and decided that maybe that was an opportunity for me to put myself out there and do something different. I knew I wanted to do something that had more of an impact in the community, as opposed to at Vision Quest, we more so dealt with the family or that kid that had some issues, and I wanted to take a more holistic approach. And one of my mentors, Alba Martinez, she reached out to me. She said, "Hey, Marcus, there's this neat little nonprofit organization in West Philadelphia," and she said, "I think that they need the sort of energy and creativity that you bring to the table." And I looked into it, and the rest is history. I met with the board, and I started working here in September of 2009.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now, it's been here 30 years in existence, 30 years in West Philadelphia, providing homes for single-parent families who find themselves in circumstances and they want to transition and transcend to a better life. So tell us about the program and tell us how you existed for 30 years and not too many people know about you. How can that be?
I know. I'm sometimes bewildered by that myself. But, you know, this organization, Achievability, started off as Philadelphians Concerned About Housing in 1981. Mm-hmm. And it was started by Sister Mary Scullion from Project Home and the Sisters of
the one that's down on Fairmount Avenue?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so everybody knows Sister Mary. You know, she's voted one of Time Magazine's most 100 influential people in the world. So she and the Sisters of Mercy were donated 4 houses by some benefactor that was giving money to Mercy Hospital at the time. And so they wanted to provide housing for single-parent women. You know, that was their focus. And they started that program. And over the years, we morphed into Achievability. And as we are today, for the last 15 years prior to me getting here, there was an executive director by the name of Jack Ferber. Jack Ferber was a former attorney/CPA, very smart person, and he was doing a lot of work around developing like Section 8 loans and things of that nature. And he was on the board and decided to run. They decided it would be good for him to become the executive director. And the reason we've been like kind of under the radar for so many years is because of his personality. You know, he took the approach of, let's do something really good, but let's keep our heads low while we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how he operates, you know. And so when I came to the organization a year and a half ago, the board, you know, was very much wanting to bring the organization out, increase the awareness of the organization for varying reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one, as you and I know, your squeaky wheel gets the oil. So if, you know, nobody knows about you, you don't get a chance to get a slice of the pie, right? And we're not unlike any other nonprofit organization. We need as much of that pie as we can so that we can continue to provide services. And what we provide, many people see us as a, you know, housing program, but that does not quite paint the picture of who we are. You know, we typically take participants in our program from shelters, from transitional living homes, off the streets, you know, people living in overcrowded housing. And they come to us and the first thing we tell them is, okay, we build and renovate houses, so you're going to get a really nice house. Most of our houses are 3-4 bedroom houses located here in Cobbs Creek, Haddington section of the city. But the catch is, if you want to stay in that house, you got to go to college. Because our mission is to break the generational cycle of poverty.
Right.
And the only way that the way that we believe that we can get to that point is by that parent going to school, acquiring skills. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a college degree. Most
so
of our
go
parents,
to technical school.
Yeah, they go
right.
to an approved technical
right.
school.
Right.
And we do a career assessment and educational assessment with them when they come into the program, because our definition of self-sufficiency is pretty explicit. You know, we say, okay, self-sufficiency to us is either you get a degree or some sort of technical degree. Most times it's RPN, LPN, you know. And the second piece of it, we have this thing called the continuum, which is a tool that measures our families as they go through the program, and it has 4 pillars to it. We measure you on finance and employment, on parenting, on personal development, and on life skills. So we follow that family for, on average, 4 to 5 years in the program, because they have to take at least 15 credit hours a year. So if you're trying to get a bachelor's degree, that's going to take you some time to get that. And so they have to get the degree. They have to, you know, do well on the continuum, 80% or higher on the continuum. And then the third piece is we go by the Pennsylvania State requirements in terms of what it means to be financially self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
So right now the requirement is if you're a parent and you have 2 kids under the age of 5, you need to make, I think it's $40,000 a year to be truly financially self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge challenge for us, because we're taking families who, one, a lot of them haven't had a steady job. Many of them don't have skills, soft skills, hard skills.
Right. They don't have a history.
Right, they don't have the history.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of really working with a blank slate many times. So that it's good that most of our families are with us on average for 4 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many things that we have to work with.
Now, is there an age group I know there's no age requirement,
mm-hmm.
but do they fall in a certain age?
Generally, it varies. Like, we go from 19 to 55.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the average age is 29 years old in our program. But I got a couple, you know, people over 50. I even had one girl that came to us. She was only 18 or 19.
Mm.
Yeah. So and that's why we have to be, you know, always looking.
So this is not a cookie cutter type program. I mean, you have your criteria,
right?
But you take any and everyone that fits in that criteria, homeless, female, parent, and then you structure your work them within the confines of your program.
Well, we do have some things that can exclude people. For instance, we don't measure this, but we should at some point. We don't have the resources to do it now, but if you are probably have an IQ below 70, you know,
right,
you probably
right.
You know, if you have things that we're saying, well, you probably wouldn't be able to get a college degree. You know, you have to have the stuff.
Plus, most of your people are already high school graduates, right?
Most of them are.
Right.
We do have some that come to us with a GED, or those who have to be at least halfway to getting a GED.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when you come into the program, you have to take what we call a TAVE test, which is like an assessment of basic adult basic skill
mm-hmm.
test, and it tells us what reading level
you are.
And
yeah.
if you're at 8th grade or above, then you are acceptable to
mm-hmm.
the program. The other thing that will preclude you from being to come into the program if you have more than 6 kids.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Also, if you have student loan debt,
mm-hmm.
right, that will preclude you from coming into the mm-hmm. program. Because one of the things is we have a strict requirement that you have to be in school within 6 months to come to the program. And if you have a lot of student loan debt, it's probably unreasonable to think that you're going to be able to pay that down in 6 months and be able to get into
mm-hmm.
school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I should say student loan debt. If you have a defaulted on your student loan,
right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you can have student loans, but you can't have defaulted
mm-hmm.
on them. Yeah.
So that means it means that they have been out of school more than 6 months when they should begin to start paying. They haven't paid,
mm-hmm.
and then now there's been like a judgment or default against them.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so now, because of that judgment or default, they're probably not going to be able to get a student loan
mm-hmm.
and get another school until
mm-hmm.
that just happens.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we don't want to set people up. You know, and we, last year, our success has been that last year we had 18 of our parents graduate
mm-hmm.
With bachelor's degrees, associate's degrees, and things of that nature. You know, we even had one person, I actually just got an email, one of those guys is now an assistant DA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard people talking to him when I out there, yeah, one of your graduates.
Yeah, so we're always excited.
Now, what happens after graduation? I mean, you just don't kick them out.
No. Once the person gets their degree, which we're coming up on a cohort now, is about to get their degrees in May, they have 1 year to transition out of the program.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that, of course, you know, just because you get a degree, you don't have you get your degree on a Monday, you got a job on Tuesday, right? Or just because you got a job, you got that degree on Monday, your boss is going to come to you and say, okay, now we're going to hike you up to this amount.
Mm-hmm.
So we take that year to transition you out of the program, and so we put you into the mentoring program. And the mentoring program goes two ways. One is, because you've been in our program for a while and you've shown that you got the stuff, then you're going to be a mentor to families who are coming in. So
right.
we'll pair you with a family, you'll be their mentor for them. And then we also develop mentors in corporate entities
mm-hmm.
like UPS,
mm-hmm.
Comcast,
mm-hmm.
and so one of their professionals, one of the executives, will be a mentor for you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now for that year, you're going to get a chance to be exposed to different individuals that you may not have had you not
right.
come to the program.
Right.
And so over that year, we're hoping to give you even a higher level of skills, so that when you leave us, you'll be truly self-sufficient. And we understand that self-sufficiency isn't a point in time. Self-sufficiency is a state of mind. You know, it's a
mm-hmm.
journey,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that year is preparing you for that journey.
Mm-hmm. I was telling your sister that was sharing with me. It sounds like a program that I've had on my show when I was doing terrestrial radio, Dignity Housing.
Yeah.
And they were doing this, doing very similar.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the people that I met in the program were males. A lot of them were ex-offenders and substance abusers.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a little different twist with the females. In this economy, is it realistic now to think that somebody can transition out in a year when you got people coming out in debt, student loans, college tuition, and across the board, even from quote-unquote stable situations, stable families, and can't get a job? Has circumstances made you rethink some of your program?
It has made us talk about it,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. and how it just affects my family. Understanding that, now even when you look at the current stats, the average costume from middle class families in 1980 was leaving at the age of 22. Now the average person leaves the home at the age of 27, mm-hmm. and you know,
or they leave and come back,
or they leave and come back, right? But it's pushing it, you know. And I think, you know, our president has recognized that, and that's why he, you know, as a part of the healthcare bill, he said now that
right.
you know
right.
you can cover mm-hmm. your kids up to the age of 26. And so we understand that that's something that we have to pay attention to. One of the things that we looked at is we used to have a strict rule that people had to work and be working consistently. But we know that, you know, our population is probably hit more heavily than any other population. It's one of the most vulnerable populations
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
we have in this country. That's the homeless and poverty. And so we have changed some of the rules around employment for our participants. In terms of the transition year, we haven't changed that, and we haven't really had a lot of problems with that, because I think one of the things, people with degrees have been hit. They haven't been hit as hard as people without degrees, and there's a strong demand for people with skills, even
mm-hmm.
in this economy,
mm-hmm.
even with high unemployment rate. You know, I was just reading something the other day that, you know, back in the 80s, 27% of jobs required degrees. Now 56% of jobs require
mm-hmm.
degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And the Obama administration has recognized that there's a huge, huge demand that is going unmet in terms of finding people with skills and degrees. So I don't know that that affects our graduates as much as it affects the people in our program
mm-hmm.
that haven't gotten their degrees yet.
Mm-hmm.
And our job, what we're trying to do, our responsibility is to prepare them as well as we can and then position them so that they can take grasp of those opportunities.
I was asking a young lady that I was talking to before you came in, and given you do an assessment, and I was asking her, have you found that most of the people who come into the program are the go-getters, the people who are highly self-motivated, who take an initiative despite their being homeless or having any kind of, you know, problems in their personal lives? It seems to me that you would have to be focused and you'd have to be committed. Even though you have the support, even though the good thing about this program is you have built in the support mechanisms, it would seem to me you'd have to be somewhat motivated just to get in the program.
Well, yeah, the young lady you were speaking up to and speaking about, her name is Jasmine Edie, and she's my vice president of self-sufficiency.
Oh, okay.
And I actually brought her in. She was the senior vice president at Phillips Workforce Development Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my strategies in bringing her in is to help us to make sure our participants are preparing themselves for those opportunities, those job opportunities. And one of the things she's also done is she's revamped our admissions process to make sure that we're doing, just as you alluded to, going for those people who are highly motivated, who really, really
mm-hmm.
want to change
mm-hmm.
their lives.
Mm-hmm.
My main concern isn't, you know, trying to pick the people who are going to do well anyway, right? My main focus in terms of who we select for this program is to find parents who are so motivated that they're going to commit to this program, and they're going to do their time, do it as quickly as they can in our program, and then move on so we can go to the next family.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we're even working with Vanguard, because Vanguard is really good at
the financial metrics. People?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're really good at finding out the drivers of success
mm-hmm.
and figuring out
mm-hmm.
what makes things work. And so they're working with us they come down on a monthly basis, and they're looking at our data to see what drives success and what can accelerate a family
mm-hmm.
going through the program
mm-hmm.
as fast as we can get them in, as fast as we can get them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're beginning to look at those things. Is it the coach that makes it, you know, a person successful? Is it the time in program? Is it the school that they choose to go to? Is it how many
mm-hmm.
kids they
mm-hmm.
have? Like
mm-hmm.
what drives
mm-hmm.
these parents to really, you know, get out of here as quickly and as successful as they can. So, you know, by revamping that admissions process, we've seen, and also I should say this too, When I first got here, we had a waiting list of 100 and something families trying to get the program. And to Jasmine and her team's credit, we've gotten that list down to about 30 families. And the way we were able to do that partially is because we were able to identify those families who we knew would make it in the program.
Right.
Every decision cut out for everybody. And so what we did was we referred those families to other programs that we thought were more suited. But I do have a belief that if you're motivated enough, you can do this program and do it and come out of here with flying colors, you know. But it is an intense program, right? You know, compares to Wharton, like, you know, the difference between a regular
cranking out a mill.
Yeah.
A diploma mill versus a...
Right, versus a school that's really going to put it to you and challenge you. And we do that. And we don't, you know, we don't make any excuses for it. We don't apologize for it.
Now, you have over 100 houses?
Actually, we have 150 houses spread, 52 houses spread throughout West Philadelphia. Mm-hmm.
So now you're in the process of acquiring properties. You fix them up.
Right.
And they're all homes,
mm-hmm.
so it's not like you're a slumlord or anything like that.
Right, they're all real homes. Yeah.
Right. And then, so then you do a maintenance piece too?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
go ahead.
So how many parts do you have? You have the acquisition, you have the real estate, and then Jasmine said you had a finance piece, and there's two other pieces, I think.
All right, well, now you want me confused, and so since you asked for it, I'm going to give it to you. even though we're a small organization, we do a lot of different things. We're a small organization with a big heart and big vision. So we talked about our what we call our FSSP program, Family Self-Sufficiency Program.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the core service, that's the services we provide.
Right.
Then we have the housing piece that works with the services. So we own these houses that we've developed over the last 30 years. So we, many of these houses, we either went and acquired from the city or we built from the ground ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we started that process. So I'm building 10 houses this spring, but that's for home ownership. We're going to build 10 houses and sell to low income to moderate income families.
Okay.
And then next year, I'm going to be building some more programmatic houses to expand on the programmatic houses we have. And then I'm actually doing a rehab of this building. This is what we call
the Bungalow
building.
So you own this building?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is the Bungalow building, and we're going to, it's going to be a $9 million rehab of this whole building. We have 24 units in this building.
So you're going to expand? Are you going to renovation?
Or? Yeah, major renovation. Mm-hmm. We have done it in 15 years. And so one of the things with this building is we want to make sure it's individually metered. Right now, all of the utilities are on one meter, so we're responsible for it.
Right.
So we're going to make sure we make these meters individual. And then we're also going to do some upgrades and some green stuff and make it more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So we're happy about that. So that's the real estate piece. Then, and along with the real estate piece is we got the maintenance guys. We have a maintenance team that maintains all our assets, right? So we have an asset management.
So these are in-home or you outsource that?
This is in-home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have these, they work for a TV building and maintain. And then I have a VP of real estate who constantly is, you know, looking
to searching for
other properties that we can develop and some other things that we can do. And then let's talk about, because the housing piece is a little different than real estate. So we also have a real estate arm, which we call the Homecoming Realty. And that's a for-profit under our umbrella that actually have a brokerage
where
we can go and sell houses and buy houses and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
That's small now. We've had for a couple of years. We haven't done much with it, but since I've been here, we're coming up with a plan on how we're going to expand it. In the next we're doing our strategic plan now in the next 5 years. I'm looking to grow that office to have 5 real estate agents who are going out in this community buying and selling houses. And that's a revenue generator to pay for our services because, as you know, federal and state and city really don't pay for services for adults. It's just not a lot of money out there for our families.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do our housing and real estate to generate revenues to pay for that.
Right.
And then we have our community arm, which we work to build the community development arm. We have a NAC office, which we call our Neighborhood Assistance Program.
Mm-hmm. What's that? What does that entail?
It's under OACD, Office of Housing and Development, yeah, the office, OHC, Office of Housing and Community Development, mm-hmm. and that's led by Deborah McCullough. And basically, we got a grant from them to work in the community, provide resources to the community, to advocate for the community. We had to go out and form a what we call CAC, Community Advisory Committee, mm-hmm. and it had to be voted on by people in the community. So we had over 500 people show up and vote for members of the community to run the CAC that advises my NAC mm-hmm. office. We do free taxes. I'm about to do a computer center for the community.
So this is for adult services, adult education?
Just anything in the community.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Any need in the community, we're trying to service it.
Mm-hmm.
We just gave out, 100 and something recycle bins to senior citizens. We just did over $300,000 in taxes for the community, mm-hmm. results in $300,000 mm-hmm. coming to the community for free. Mm-hmm. I did a job fair. We're doing a career boot camp series of 6 workshops that we're doing for the community. We're partnering with the mayor's office. So we do a lot of different things like that for the community.
That stuff and people don't know about you?
I know. Well, we just started. We've been doing some of this stuff, but yeah, some of it we just started. I'm launching a whole neighborhood plan, hopefully over the next year, with Wells Fargo support, to do a plan for the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
right? And
mm-hmm.
so it's going to be a comprehensive plan around the 60th Street corridor, because we bought mm-hmm. 11 properties on 60th Street, so we really wanted to redevelop that whole commercial corridor, because it's on the...
Now, isn't that already part of a revitalization plan? Market Street and it's somewhere around 60th Street, right?
It's hard to say. Some mm-hmm. Different people got different plans, right? And so what I wanted to do was try to pull the whole community together and get their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And also work with elected officials. I'm trying to figure out how that's going to all work. But that's part of getting the money to start putting this plan together.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Wells Fargo wants to work with us. So that's the community piece. Some of it is a lot with the community, but... So that's, we do services, FSSP, we got housing, we got real estate, and we got community development, and the last piece is economic development.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're beginning to work with businesses on 60th Street around, giving them support,
right.
Trying to bring resources
right.
to the area.
Right.
Met with the Commerce Department, partnership.
How are they doing? Because at one point, like them, 52nd Street were fairly... And 63rd Street
mm-hmm.
Were, fairly viable. So what was that? Mm-hmm. Are they still?
It's tough. The L just
right.
started
right.
Being operable, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago?
Yeah.
So that whole time it was down over 10 years, that decimated businesses in this area. So we're beginning to see more activity in this area.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it has to be more uniform. And so I think that we can be one of the organizations that kind of take the lead on making sure that all the information
right.
is being,
right.
Centered with the community members, and we're just not just pushing stuff down the community's throat. Like, the community is a part of that process. I think we're on the uptake and getting back, trying to get it back to being viable neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
a viable corridor.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I didn't know, I heard from Commerce Department when I met with them 2 or 3 weeks ago, was that the 60th Street stop is the second most traveled stop along the L.
Oh, yeah?
Because bus up there, and then, people getting off,
mm-hmm.
off the L. So,
mm-hmm.
To me, that's something that we can leverage, and make
right.
it something, positive on that corridor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, you're a nonprofit. My term as a president of a nonprofit ended December 31st, and the economy and fundraising were brutal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had our own issues in terms of the board doing its due diligence to raise money, but
mm-hmm.
nevertheless, in the present economy, it's rough. So how are you doing? How are you making it?
I have to back up a second to answer that. When I first got here, the organization had within a year where they had a $272,000 deficit. Mm. And then the year after that, they had like a 300-something thousand. I think last year we had like 400-something thousand. And when I initially got here, I thought that had to do with the economy. And I don't know it had so much to do with the economy. Because for us, we are not totally reliant, as I said at the beginning, on city, state, federal funding. We get a little bit of state and city funding. Now, our federal funding comes from HUD for the housing piece.
Right.
So that wasn't affected at all. What affected us was the fact, you know, it was internal because we didn't put real estate in our pipeline. And, you know, when you're dealing with real estate, you got to, you know, money that you want 3 years from now, or the money you want today, you should have been putting real estate in the pipeline 3 years ago. So, like, say, what we're doing today on our real estate, we're going to see the money
right.
2 years from now, or 3 years from now. So, as an organization, we have to be focused on making sure that we're pursuing real estate activities and opportunities as much as possible.
Right.
Now, we're at a state, because, like, I'm closing on this building this month with PNC Bank. That's going to generate over $1 million in developer fees that will come back to the organization. We're going to build the 10 houses, so we'll get a substantial amount of money for that. So we made some changes, and I think this our fiscal year ends June 30th, and I'm
right.
pretty confident that we're going to end either break even or with some surplus, which is a huge accomplishment
right.
going from where we were. But, you know, we do still have to, you know, be very active with our individual donors. You know, I'm always reaching out to them to see, you know, trying to continue to cultivate that relationship. Corporations, I've met with UPS this morning, gave them a presentation last minute, and I just got word back that they were going to fund us. We, you know, I'm always, you know, just looking for different areas where we can kind of get some resources to keep doing what we're doing to pay for our services. But you're right, yeah, nonprofits were decimated by this economy. We're just lucky enough to be diversified enough in our funding that we're not totally relying on one different stream.
But that was our problem. We were primarily relying on grants from the state and the county to do what we were doing, you know, and a lot of that funding was restricted, so we didn't have the capital to do a lot of the other things that we needed to do. But that's not my problem anymore.
That's what will keep you up at night, though, won't it?
Man, when you have to lay people off, and had to negotiate for our lease, you know, because we didn't even have the money to pay the lease.
So, I
can imagine, and you're talking about millions, because I think our budget was only a couple hundred thousand.
Okay.
You know? So when you're talking about millions, man, you know.
Yeah.
You have a program coming up, a fundraiser coming up. What's that about?
Oh, that's our Food for Thought event. All right. Every year for the last 8 years, we've had, you know, our annual big fundraiser. This year, I'm doing it with some of the top chefs in Philly. A friend of mine, who's a top chef, Mark Vetri. He and I we played ball together on a. We were raising money for this other charity, and one day we were talking. I was just like, man, I need some help with my upcoming event. I can't think of any ideas. I need to. He said, well, why don't you use chefs? He said, people love chefs. I was like, well, I don't know any except for you. He said, well, you know me. I'll get them. And so he started reaching out to his buddies, and we put this together. And, you know, and every year we always honor someone with an education award. We always give them a commitment to education. And this year, since, you know, our theme was more about food and healthy lifestyles and all that stuff, we decided to honor Dr. Ian Smith, who's from Celebrity Fit Club. He's on President Obama's and works with Michelle Obama around nutrition. And he also is written
on that book. He's the one that's doing that, what's it, 500 million
pounds? Yeah, 50 million pounds. So brilliant young African American guy. So, you know, we reached out to him and told him we wanted to honor him. He was like, great. And so Then we reached out to Ali Velshi, who was one of the anchors on CNN, which he's huge, and he was like, yeah, I'd love to do it, you know. So we put the event together, and we normally do our events at Urban Outfitters, which is a beautiful, beautiful facility at the Navy Yard.
Oh, okay.
And it's right there on the
water.
Yeah, and it's just amazing. Mm-hmm. And so the venue is perfect. The food is going to be the best food. Mm-hmm. And I just secured like a really good band, because when we started planning this event, I said, I want to have a fun event. And fun, that means to me, food, music, and great guests. Mm-hmm. And I think we have that.
So when is it?
It's March 19th.
Okay.
On a Saturday.
Okay.
It's a kickoff of our 30th anniversary. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to kick off our 30th anniversary, and that's going to kick off our 30 for 30. I'm trying to do 30 events, and we're going to do 30 events and activities within the next year. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, how much are the tickets for the event, and how can people get them?
The tickets are $150, and you can purchase the tickets online at www.achievability.org. Or you can even call here. Call our office, 215-748-8800.
Okay. Now, you know from interviewing you before, you had to slow down and get
it. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the conversation. I'm just talking to you. All right, let me start that over. If you wish to purchase tickets to the Food for Thought event, you can purchase those tickets at www.achieveability.org. And Achieve Ability is spelled as two words together, .org. And you can also call us at 215-748-8800.
Mm-hmm. So do you have, like, friends of Achieve Ability, a support network like that?
Not yet. You know, I do need that. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about, like, a friend raiser and mm-hmm. friends of Achieve Ability. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, informally we do. You know, I'll, like, say for this event, I'll reach out and say, make sure you send this out to your mm-hmm. network. Mm-hmm. I need support on this. But that's something I think over the next year we should start to formalize. Because we do need help. Most of our board members are pretty passionate and committed, mm-hmm. but there's only so much that they can do. And, you know, I think that, you know, we should take advantage of some of the young generation, because most of our board members are seasoned, and we've talked about diversifying, you know, the people who get involved mm-hmm. with this organization. Mm-hmm. So I think we do need to look at having some friends over to you, but especially being the fact, also the fact is that our board are mostly from the main line,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. Mm-hmm. So we want to give
that to supported Project Home, basically. Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly, and I think it's the same kind of deal. Mm-hmm. So we want to try to, mm-hmm. You know, focus on getting more people in Philadelphia involved with mm-hmm. the organization. Mm-hmm.
Short term and then long term, what are your goals? How do you see it moving forward?
Short term, what we are focused on right now is, as I said, I've been here a year and a half now, so we started the process of assessing, you know, where we are as an organization and looking at our programs and our services and being very critical of ourselves. And that's why we brought, you know, organizations like Vanguard and others in.
Mm-hmm.
Short term, we're focused on quality improvement and continuous improvement of what we do with our participants. And also in the community, we're focused on, you know, just building those blocks to relationships and bridges with the community members. Different grassroots being here in West Philadelphia, I am learning that there are a lot of different people and entities that I need to reach mm-hmm. out to and make sure that they're
different neighborhoods. And
yes, So that's been a learning curve for me. And third thing short term is just making sure that we're solvent, you know, making sure that, you know, we're responsible with the dollars that we receive and making sure we maximize what we mm-hmm. do with those dollars. Mm-hmm. Long term, I'm former athlete, you know, A type personality.
So you're saying former now?
I think it's time to admit that to myself. you know, that competitive is I wanted to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I fully believe in the services that we offer. And one of the things that we started to do is look at how do we replicate. How can we replicate what we do and put it in different places? One of the areas we're looking at is Detroit. We're looking at Baltimore. We're looking at other urban centers where our services can help people. You know, so I'm hoping that the data and from the research that we're doing will show that this could be an evidence-based program. You know.
Well, it seemed to me that. A program like this begs to be replicated. Just to put people in homes and get them to the point where they can stand on their own, it would be magnificent, particularly, and I'm not being pessimistic, I just don't see any break in this economic situation anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that means that there is a humongous need for a program just like this. Any thought to expanding outside of West Philly, outside of the parameters here?
Yes. With, you know, the thing that you brought up is one of the things that we have to consider, too, is the economic implications on us because, you know, as I said earlier, we need the resources to expand. So, like, just on Tuesday, yesterday, the governor released his budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just on the phone with my board member. We were talking about some of the results of that budget and how it may impact us and impact what we want to do going forward. So there was some huge cuts from an economic standpoint. He did some economic from the economic department, to the Department of Community Economic Development, and that affects our ability to build houses. And then there was also cuts in the PHSA, which we get low-income housing tax credits to do some of these deals. And then there were cuts, proposed cuts, and the federal government that went to the Senate, I think the House voted to increase funding for CDBG dollars.
Mm-hmm.
However, the Senate is asking for like a 62% cut. And asking for a 30% cut in the homes program. Mm-hmm. So that would be devastating for organizations like us who mm-hmm. want to build and continue to, you know, expand. So we're going to have some challenges over the long term, and so it makes it very difficult to really plan to expand. We know the cuts ahead of time. You see what's happening. And, yeah, of course, this is just for next year, and we're hoping that, you know, I'm not pessimistic either. However, I am also of the mindset that it didn't take us getting here overnight. We're not going to get out of it overnight. I think we were in a slow decline for 8 years to get to this point. And I think that, you know, President Obama is doing an excellent job, in my opinion, in terms of what he's trying to do to build this economy and trying to do, especially it seems to me he has a special interest in helping those most vulnerable, helping the poor, making sure that, you know, we're providing a quality education for our kids. And I'm talking about, when I say our kids, I'm talking about the kids who have to go to public school, the kids who, the families who can't afford private school or are not fortunate enough to get their kids in charter school.
Right.
And then he has a primary focus on community colleges, which we know that's a gateway for us to get into four-year colleges because we can't afford to go to a four-year college for four years.
Right.
So we can
for 5 years now.
Yeah, 5 years, right. So, yes, I agree with you when I see what's going on in Detroit, when I see what's going on in other urban centers, and I sit back and say, man, I think we could help, you know, that city, or I think there's some families there that we can help with our program.
Mm-hmm.
And I've even talked to the executive director for Newark's Housing Authority, and they were just like, they wanted to talk to us about our program.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, economics played a part, so that really didn't go anywhere. But it is good. I've been contacted from different people across the country about our program. You know, it's interesting, yeah, a lot of people don't hear about it, but when they do hear about it, they get it.
Right.
They see the impact. The impact for us is we're going to take a family, you know, one, the impact to the city, is you no longer have to worry about putting that family in a shelter and paying $140 a night to house that family. You no longer have to worry about paying that, giving that mother a check or welfare for $400 a month. You no longer have to worry about child care subsidy. You no longer have to worry about unemployment. Because when they come to us, we're saying that when they leave us, they're going to contribute to this tax base. They're going to contribute as citizens. They're going to be civic, or they're going to be exposed to civic activities. You know, because we also believe that they need
is that a part of the program that they have to give back?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean the way you've laid it out is really a model that I'm surprised more and more people haven't embraced, but I can see why they don't, because like you said in the beginning, it's holistic,
right.
And this culture tends not to focus, you know, it's like the quick fix,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the cookie cutter kind of thing, and human beings aren't like that, really.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I think, you know, people aren't patient. We
right,
my
right,
size,
right.
So I can't go to somebody and say, okay, you give us that town, we'll work with them for 4.5 years, and we'll turn out, you know, a really good product, you know. It's like, no, I need it next year. You know,
mm-hmm.
like, well,
yeah, I need
it
for my next quarter statistics. So, you know,
it's not gonna happen.
All right, man. I'm not gonna hold you. This is
no
great. Give us the details of the fundraiser, and that's just the kickoff. 30 for 30.
Yes. Again, you know, I implore you and your listeners to come to our event at Urban Outfitters at the Navy Yard. That event is occurring on March 19th. We have a slew, a cadre of the top chefs in Philadelphia. Mark Ventry, Jose Garces, Kevin Spryger, the winner of Top Chef, Dana Herbert, who just won Nick's Great Baker on TLC, and a host of other chefs from some of the most exquisite restaurants in the city. We're going to be doing their best dishes, and we're going to be honoring Dr. Ian Smith, host of Celebrity Fit Club, founder of 50 Million Pound Challenge. He's doing his fifth book called Happy that we're going to be giving free releases out for. It's $150, and all that money is tax deductible, and those proceeds go to helping us to take care of these families and make sure these families become self-sufficient. If you want information on the event, please go to www.achieveability, that's achieveability.org, or you can call us at 215-748-8800. Again, this is a great event, food for thought. We're doing it at Urban Outfitters at the Navy Yard. And if you do come, please come say hi to Marcus Allen. I'll be the tallest guy in the world.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Julian. I appreciate it. My pleasure.
For more information about achievability, go to www.achieveability.org. And you can call area code 215-748-8802. And as always, this is Junius Ricardo Stanton, wishing each and every one of you love, peace, health, prosperity, wisdom, but most of all, power. The power to find meaning, purpose, and fulfillment in your life so that you evolve into all that the Creator intends for you to be. And your life manifests magnificently through the actualization of the divinity, genius, and creativity within you. Till next time, stay strong.
Cyberspace is a place that no army with artillery invades.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court
is going to try it.